Getting back to ESR1 mutations, Erica, I'm curious right now, do you look for them? Do you think about the results in terms of your choices? Does it come into play in your practice?
I do. I routinely profile my metastatic patients with a molecular profile, so I normally know if they have ESR1 mutations. We know that patients up front, it's extremely rare to have an ESR1 mutation, and that comes with therapy. It's a mechanism of resistance, right? So it's not uncommon for me to profile. I think it's important because, as multiple people have touched on earlier, I think for our ER-positive patients, if they continue to get months benefit out of each line of endocrine therapy you put them on, I continue to do that and spare them from moving to chemotherapy. And so that helps me tailor which endocrine therapy to pick, right? If you have an ESR1 mutation, fulvestrant, an oral SERD is a wiser choice than something like exemestane, everolimus that we commonly use in the later line settings and is a more reasonable option for somebody that doesn't have an ESR1 mutation.
One of the questions we asked Nilima in the survey was whether or not people do multiplex genomic testing. FoundationOne, for example, we know from our work all throughout oncology and all kinds of solid tumors that this is commonly done, looking for basket trials, looking for alterations, that particularly when people kind of run out of approved options. What about this type of approach in metastatic ER-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer? How does that, if at all, enter your practice?
So in the first line setting, with the CDK4/6 inhibitors being so effective and us not having an excuse not to use them, I generally do not, outside of a clinical trial, profile in the first line metastatic setting for ER positive. For other subtypes, I generally do, specifically in triple negative, but in ER positive, I do not generally. I wait until after they progress on the CDK4/6, and then when I'm looking for a trial, that's when I generally send molecular profiling. But I know that others do it first line. But I think what the PALOMA data showed us too, I felt like, is that we know that patients, if they receive a CDK4/6 inhibitor, independent of their ESR mutation, it seems like they have a response. And so I don't generally profile in the first line.
So another issue, and kind of curious, Sean, what your thoughts are, is trying to identify people who are going to benefit more by, obviously, that's a huge theme in general in oncology, but how do we identify a patient like Sarah's who has this 4.5-year response to an endocrine therapy, a CDK inhibitor, from patients who don't do as well? How are we doing in that regard?
We need to be doing a little bit better, is my short answer to that. I think this is one of the two or three holy grails in CDK4/6 clinical practice at the moment, is can we identify an upfront biomarker in a patient with metastatic disease that would make us more or less inclined to commence a CDK4/6 inhibitor in the first line? And I think what we either need is a clinical parameter that we can use or a molecular biomarker that we can use to try and make that decision. There's been a lot of analysis, but clinical parameters looking at subgroups within the major first-line studies. There's also been a fairly hearty effort to identify a molecular biomarker of resistance or increased benefit from these drugs in the first-line setting. And to be honest, we haven't really uncovered one at this point. I guess ER-positivity would probably be the biomarker that we would use routinely in clinical practice. Theoretically, if an ER-positive cancer had a mutation or didn't express the RB protein, which is the target of CDK4/6, that should confer resistance to a CDK4/6 inhibitor, but we just don't see that enough in the metastatic setting to know if that's relevant.